Don, come over here. I think we found the source.
Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it?
Absolutely. Isn't this fantastic?
Oh, God.
Look, there's this big log here, and there's a little stream coming in over on the right, a little stream on the left, and there's one just over here. And this looks like where they've just literally all starting to make the start of our river.
The meeting of the waters.
Meeting of the waters.
I think there's a song for that.
It certainly is.
Lovely.
And also, whilst enjoying the start of that, over on the left, Alan's just found...
Oh, my goodness me.
Sparrowhawk hill.
What do you think?
Yeah, it definitely looks like a sparrowhawk hill. A lot of feathers from a wood pigeon and a few primary feathers flown around as well.
A little bit of blood. So there's obviously used this as a plucking
post. Yeah.
Post, yeah. Fantastic.
So it's obviously taking its time and enjoy this. Most likely a female sparrowhawk, because the male wouldn't be able to tackle a big bird like a wood pigeon. That is great.
Absolutely. And it is wood pigeon, no doubt about it. Fantastic. God. Yeah. And you don't often actually find plucking posts. You've really got to look. They usually have favourite posts, sparrowhawks, don't they?
That's right.
But a big female sparrowhawk, this is almost opportunistic, isn't it, do you think?
Definitely.
Because the used posts, you know, merlins have them, don't they? And they bring their prey back and they get more and more feathers around
them. Yeah,
they
have a couple of favourite posts.
But this one looks very much like an opportunistic one on a bank with all these feathers. Just sat there and, as you say, enjoyed a pigeon.
A real ambush attack.
Fantastic.
And a bit of breast of wood pigeon.
And all that's left of the feathers.
Yeah.
Even the feet are gone.
Incredible. Well, I expect you could hunt around for those. And then, of course...
Something else might have scavenged what was left.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And then also you're going to land up with the sparrowhawk regurgitating a pellet later with the hard bits as well.
This is the beginning of our river.
Absolutely.
This tiny little strip of water babbling away over those stones, as it has done for a long, long time. But it's very pretty.
Babbling brook.
I remember it being lost in a forest in Bulgaria. And these forests, they apparently go off to Romania.
It'll be a hell of a walk.
But they say if you do get lost in a forest, it's to follow the river. And the water, naturally enough, is going down all the time. And if you can follow the flow of the river.
It's a good safety thing.
It is, really.
Yeah, great idea.
Not much for getting lost in these few little trees.
No.
But,
not where we are,
but
no, I agree.
It's still a lovely spot.
It's an extremely beautiful. I've never actually been to this spot before, Alan. It's really lovely.
It's very pretty.
And the way the sun sparkles on the water.
And also, you look at the trees all around, because we are in amongst the trees here as well. But look at the carpet of vegetation. I mean, you've got holly, you've got all sorts of things growing, but there's this sort of carpet because of the heavy trees above. Later on, when the vegetation on the trees fills in, this will go really dark, so it gives it a chance to have these sort of open areas and sort of suppresses the heavy stuff from growing. So you've actually got it quite open with lots of low vegetation. It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. Lots of ferns.
And a great photographic opportunity for people who would like to come out with a camera, like you, Chris.
Thank you.
And anybody wants to look at any of these photographs, they'd have to look at wildside.ie.
And that water looks so crystal clear, you could almost drink it. But I'm wondering too, with the sunlight glinting on it there, is that gold? You know, there's talk now that there's gold in the north of County Wexford.
And there's gold in them there hills.
Well, we're in the hills, and there's people panned these rivers long ago. I wonder if there's little sparkles of gold left in there, maybe.
You never know your luck. I don't know that I would, as you say, I don't know that I'd put a glass under there and drink it. It
looks clear, but...
I'd love to know what's, you know, I know it's coming out of the ground, but a little bit further up, under the ground or wherever, what's seeping into it? I'd like to know a little bit more about it.
Actually, you haven't said that, Chris. I did get a rather strong smell coming across, and it was almost like sewerage.
Oh, well, we're definitely not drinking the water.
I'm not trying to put you off, because it's such a beautiful place, and you can almost imagine, again, all kinds of wonderful things here. Like, you can imagine, in ancient times, people used to believe that there were what's called wood spirits, the dryad of the woods. And you really get a sense of the elemental here. Really magical. These little shallow areas are ideal for very small fish as little nurseries. whether it's minnows or small fry, or even little creatures like mayfly would be kind of hiding under the rocks and that, and they look like almost little crayfish when they're that small.
And caddisfly, and you know the caddisfly larvae are beautiful because very often they attach little bits of vegetation and stones and things all around them, and then they're hidden underneath the stones there and hang on and can survive these rushing waters as well.
Well, I'm glad Christopher was sensible enough to wear wellies today. And you know what they say about when you drag wellies through the mud? The Wellington boot? Yeah. You're dragging somebody's name through the mud.
Just looking at your little nursery here, there's actually all sorts of things here in under the stones. So when I turn the stone up, look, you can actually, there's a caddisfly larvae there.
Ah, lovely. Yeah.
Superb.
There's so much life there. And of course, I remember listening to this Native American in Canada, and we were chatting about various things. And in the end, you know what he said to me? You know, Don, he says, I judge a nation by the quality of its water.
As the stream tumbled downhill, we followed its path until eventually it became wider and deeper.
Well, the thing about a river as well is that it is a magnet for a lot of birds and mammals come down. And of course, anglers who like to fish along the rivers too, they would know the certain places where the fish, swim.
Rest in those deep pools.
Yeah, some of them deep pools, some like fast flowing water.
Absolutely.
Where there's a rudd or whatever it may be.
The vegetation's really starting to blossom now. There's a massive amount of wood anemone out, which I'm really impressed with because I've got they're particularly favourites
really
of mine.
They're beautiful. Yeah.
And the celandines are out and the kingcups are out. And the kingcups, of course, love water and boggy bits. So, you know, where the water's stopped running, if you like, you know, get those as well. And there's an awful lot of laurel here as well. And they're in flower.
You know, I see some of these lovely flowers that grow along by riverbanks and babbling brooks, I usually think of, Shakespeare's great play Hamlet, where Ophelia goes out and picks the different flowers, you know, in remembrance of her love and that. And it's so beautiful. Then the great artist, British artist, the Pre-Raphaelite artist Millet, he actually recorded each one that she mentioned in his painting of Ophelia.
Oh, fantastic.
So just beautiful.
Of course, these are the real arteries of the county, aren't they? The rivers and then the streams are the capillaries, almost like a human being, really. And, you know, take the county as a whole, and then you've got these such important waterways. And as you were mentioning earlier, Alan, great for passing seeds down. Now, obviously, we get problems with other plants, rogue plants that are not supposed to be here. They get carried down as well. But even so, all these things are...
Sorry, Chris, to interrupt you. There's a kingfisher just gone shooting.
Fantastic, fantastic.
That little flash of bluey-green hair.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Kind of electric blue.
Saw it out of the corner of my eye. Oh.
And it's so easy to miss them, you know. And so many people think that kingfishers are big, and they're not. They're quite small. And if you don't get the light on them, you don't get the blue, and they've just gone.
Yes.
Now, sometimes you get the warning because you hear them. It's a very piercing call. I didn't hear that one call. No. It just shot down. Great
and
size.
Of course, when they are perched, you see the lovely kind of orangey-red breast. And then their lovely bright red legs.
No doubt about it. Seeing a kingfisher is a treat. Now, the thing is that they're much more common than we think as well. I mean, they are in our waterways. Yeah. But the trouble is they're discreet. And as I mentioned, they're smaller than you think. And unless you catch that electric blue or hear them, you can miss them so easily because they hear us and they're gone, you know. Unless you're very
That's
lucky.
That's why a lot of people who are, say, on canoes or something like going up rivers, they disturb a kingfisher there.
And fishermen, when they land up on the rod.
I know
a couple, which is just fabulous.
It really is. The dippers around here will probably be nesting under that bridge up there, isn't it?
Yeah, very likely. They love nesting under bridges or beside waterfalls, very close to the water. They can get badly affected naturally by floodwaters because if they don't get it high enough, the nest high enough, they can get flooded out. But normally what they do is they build a round dome nest and have an entrance coming in up from the water, so they go up and into the nest, nice big round dome.
No, I know they breed very early. It's usually the end of February, isn't it, into March?
Yeah, Ireland and Britain, end of February. Europe is sort of March. That's the first brood. They normally have two broods, very occasionally three broods. Four or five eggs, that's the sort of time. And this pair, we've seen this one regularly.
Do you know what I love when you do see them? It's the way they sit on a rock and they bob up and down.
It's
almost as if their legs are on springs. It's really beautiful. And of course, they are blackbird size.
Yep.
With a lovely white bib.
White bib, darker under the belly, very attractive. And they have this membrane that goes over the eye that protects them when they're in the water, because, of course, they love feeding under the water. And the time to see them, we're still quite early in one sense, because they're probably sitting on eggs now, but the time to really enjoy them is when they're under pressure feeding young ones who are screaming for food. And of course, the parents don't care. All they're interested in is getting food. So they come out, and then you get them, watch them going around under the water, coming up onto a rock, bashing the old crane fly larvae that they've just got, and then they take them back up to the chicks. So it's great fun. And it's fascinating, because when the young do come out of the nest, they very often come out before they can actually fly properly. You know, they're quite happy to sort of drift down or wash down in the water. Naturally, they're better off if they can fly, but they live under the water so much. They're so adapted for that particular environment, that harsh environment. And even when you hear the song of them calling, the song is quite strong and you can hear it over water, because again, it's because of this rushing water. So the song and the call is very distinctive and quite loud. And again, developed to get over this business of rushing water, which of course they are.
So they're the only aquatic songbird we have in Ireland.
True aquatic, yeah, absolutely.
And of course, the old name for the bird was actually a water ouzel, very like the ring ouzel, that lovely bird that comes in from Africa in the springtime.
Yeah, and of course the ring ouzel is a thrush, much more closely related to the blackbird, a blackbird with a white throat, and that's where the ouzel bit comes from, with the white bib on the old dipper. I think that's probably where it is. But I don't know, something about dippers, I just love dippers. I always think they're just so attractive. Back to what you were saying about the way they just sit and bob and look so happy sitting on a rock, and then this very fast flight that goes over the water and away they go. In fact, while we're here, there's a grey wagtail over there. Look, Dom.
Ah, yes, lovely.
And they're just fantastic. Again, very much of streams. Probably not nesting, although there's a pair here that nests up on the bridge as well in the ivy. So they might be doing that. But very often you find them in farm buildings or something.
Yeah. That's why I love these lovely old stone bridges. Whoever built them, obviously, they built them in a functional way. But the use of them, the beautiful design of them, and they must have had something in mind as well for all these lovely wildlife creatures. The very fact that dippers and wagtails and even bats have all take advantage of these old bridges.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And usually the bridges have these little cracks and things so that the bats can get in underneath. Yeah. And then the sides are a whole life of their own, and you even get wrens, of course, on bridges and so on.
Can I ask why you're calling that a grey wagtail? Because that looks yellow to me.
Yeah. Grey wagtails, yeah, it's funny because the grey wagtails, because of the grey on the back, but they are beautiful lemon yellow underneath. The male has this this time of the year, his little black bib just underneath the just on the throat there, and he's always very, very attractive as well. That one looks more like the female. Maybe we disturbed it or something.
And they have a long tail, of course, that's bobs around the place. A lot of people would be familiar with what's called a pied wagtail, the willy wagtail, as it's colloquially known as well. But I remember we discussing this before, Chris, and you were saying that the bobbing of the tail can indicate to birds of prey that they're very fast.
And you won't actually catch them. Yeah, I always think that's an amazing thing.
Because it's quite true. You see very, very few wagtails as road casualties, I'm glad to say.
So if you think about it, you think back, I can remember 15 years ago was the last time I saw a pied wagtail dead on the road. And the reason he was dead was because there was another pied wagtail beating the heck out of it. And it was obviously some sort of territorial fight in the middle of the road. And that's the only time I've never actually seen a casualty of a pied wagtail.
Wow.
Because they're so quick. They don't look quick, but that long tail gives them an extra sort of flick balance. It's very clever.
And as Alan said, they do look like yellow wagtails. And the funny thing is, if you travel to places like Spain or places like that in Europe, you will actually come across what's called a yellow wagtail. And they're quite similar, obviously, but there's more yellow.
A much shorter tail.
Yes.
Yeah, and they're different, and they're a migrant as well, yeah. Whereas our grey wagtails stay here all year round. Like our dippers, of course. Yeah.
And I remember in Dublin years ago,
Dipper. Dipper just arrived, look.
Fantastic.
Absolutely.
I just have to tell you very quickly that there was a lovely roost of pied wagtails in O'Connell Street. And they were there, I think, since 1913. They were there for a long, long time. Beautiful. And of course, then not so long ago, sad to say, the trees were cut down.
Oh, no.
And the famous
roost went, did it?
Went. It did indeed.
Well, we have that in Wexford Town, all right? We have a pied wagtail roost during the winter, which is really good as well, near the quay. And you see them building up just at dusk very often. But just enjoy this dipper now.
Oh,
because, as
really
you say,
lovely.
It's much easier to describe him when you can see him. But
what exactly is it doing there?
Well, I think it's waiting, wants to go into the nest. And I think it's probably watching us.
Oh, we're in the way.
Yeah, it's just
not
it's
really,
come down.
But we're
now, it might go in, it might not. But, I mean, obviously, we are in full view. So they're going to be cautious enough. They'll also... might be, I don't know if you can tell the sexes of them, and I don't think you can, but it might be the male waiting to call the female out to feed, because we are late afternoon and he might want to bring her out from the nest and take her down the river and they can feed and then she'll go back in.
Oh, so bring her out to dinner. Very,
yeah, yeah.
Very romantic.
Very civilized.
Very nice. dinner for two. But again, birds, I mean, are very clever insofar as that they'll be cautious about going to their nest without checking around, because apart from magpies and maybe the odd mink or even a rat, if they find out where the nest is, they can be very vulnerable. So these birds are obviously cautious where they'll actually
Do you know, Dom, go. You remind me, years ago I was ringing dippers. And on a bridge, remarkably like that, I wanted to ring the brood, and I came down as normal, and I had my little stepladder, and I climbed into the middle of the river and put the stepladder down on the ground in the river. It wasn't that fast, so it was okay. And I climbed up, and the nest was right in the middle of the bridge, on the side, so 8 foot high, so well up. And as I got there, up to the nest, obviously it was the dome nest, I thought, oh, the entrance looks a little bit funny, and I put my hand in, and something nipped the end of my finger, which dippers don't do. They come out, you know, and I thought, well, it must have gone. And I nearly fell out off the ladder because I was so taken by surprise, and this big rat came out.
Oh,
and he'd been into the nest and obviously eaten it, yeah.
Oh, God.
But he'd obviously eaten all my eggs, chicks. Well, I was expecting chicks, so he'd eaten the chicks. Oh. But luckily it didn't pierce the skin, but it did make me nearly fall off the ladder, I can tell you.
Oh, that was nasty. You mentioned domed nest. So what did they build the nest? Is it mud or what is it?
No, mainly mosses. It really is mainly mosses, using the vegetation. Occasionally they will pick up, obviously, vegetation and stuff as well.
And lichen, all kinds of stuff like that.
Yeah, and they really... I mean, that one will be under the bridge. You won't be able to see it without going into the water and getting well and truly wet.
Well, you know, it's really inspirational sitting here looking at this beautiful bird.
I hope you're going to paint this one.
I certainly will. And you know, if anybody wants to see this bird, always go to a place where there are these old bridges. Look over the bridge, look along by the water, the flowing water, and these birds will have their favourite little rocks to bob on, and you'll see the white splashes to know that they've been used.
Yeah.
And they are territorial, and they'll be using a particular stretch of river, and that couple will keep that whole site, they'll be site faithful
right through the breeding season. Yeah.
And they may come back the following year. Look out for this, I think, one of the nicest birds in the countryside.
And suddenly the dipper was gone, flying right past us as it made its way downriver.